Welcome to the Certainty Advice Podcast, where advice starts with your best interests in mind, helping you achieve more in your financial life. And now, here's your host, founder of the Certainty Advice Group, Jim Stackpool.
G'day everybody, Jim Stackpool with another in the Certainty Advice Podcast series, where we aim to help more and more Australians find the financial certainty they deserve whilst covering the trends to help understand and avoid the pitfalls of the emerging profession of advice as the old industry slowly moves, and reluctantly I must say, away from advice provision to product manufacturing, and understand some of those steps that we need to take so that all the money you have and all the effort you put in to get that money gives you the best possible return, the greatest possible certainty for you moving forward. That's what these podcasts are all about. Today's topic, continuing on this theme of super and how we best realise the great expectations that have been promised us all, considering it's been in place now 21 years. Important information continually coming out about super, about Royal Commission and other things as well. But questions have been asked about the relevance and the future of non-industry superannuation funds, generally run by the big insurance groups like AMP and the banks. Most of them have their own funds. Stats coming out recently showing of the world's top 300 largest superannuation and pension funds, as they're called overseas sometimes, the largest 300, 17 of those largest worldwide funds are Australian, but only two of those 17 are non-industry super funds. Yes, of course, the non-industry super funds have some high degree of mandated, regular, consistent cash flows coming in. For instance, every new employee in retail will probably most likely be automatically seeing their super money going into rest super, for instance, whereas the banks and the non-banks like AMP need to compete for it. So it's obvious that just by natural selection, these things are going to grow. And in fact, they're saying they're doubling their size every 5 years. Today, I'm lucky to have Ryony Clamau. He's director, owner with Acquire Wealth Partners in the downtown district of booming Southport on the gorgeous Queensland Gold Coast. A very tight team headed up by his practice manager, Donna. Ryony has built very quickly a really nice, neat, small, very effective boutique advisory firm serving the classic Gold Coaster, a younger, dynamic, small business community and owners driven by that. You just smell it, that natural Gold Coast entrepreneurialism seeps out of everywhere up there. He also looks after a variety of personal clients and families, all seeking the firm's support to stay on their own unique financial tracks as he guides them along those paths. So today we're talking about great expectations from superannuation. The key things to listen for Ryony, I think, is number one, what he really believes is the reason why most of us feel disconnected from what, as Ryony says, it's our biggest asset. This superannuation money is often bigger than the family home. Ryony also has got a fair bit to say about what our great Aussie axiom of she'll be right, mate, and when combined with the Aussie tendency to prefer the DIY approach, they may both actually be working against what many of us could be getting out of our own superannuation. And thirdly, listen for how product providers, in Ryony's view, has dulled our whole approach to superannuation and given us the wrong message. But anyway, as with all these, I started by asking Ryony, what's wrong with superannuation in Australia today?
Oh, look, I think there are things that are wrong with it. I think the main thing that's wrong with it is the lack of trust that consumers have or people have with the whole system. And that stemmed from a whole bunch of government intervention, changes, legislative impacts, and generally people's lack of understanding about what it's there to do and how it works for them. So that all just turns back to an ultimate lack of trust in the whole process. And so I think fundamentally that part of it's flawed.
So you make a good point there. Probably for many Australians, after the family home, superannuation is possibly their second largest asset. And I'm sure if it's sitting in a bank account somewhere, they'd have a very different mentality to it. Because it's unseen, unheard, untouched, and probably unknown in terms of an issue until they get close to retirement, they're quite apathetic towards it. How do we address that apathy, in your opinion? And for anyone listening to this, what should they be reconsidering their superannuation as, if anything?
You're right. There's massive apathy around it. And in some cases, you might reckon it's actually sometimes their biggest asset in retirement. I've got clients with superannuation that's much bigger than the value of family home. So I think it comes back to the fact that it's been something that's been introduced to people, and because they can't access it, they think that they shouldn't care about it. There's a general lack of financial literacy amongst Australian people to understand how compounding operates. So because they see it as a small amount of money today, they don't actually appreciate how much it's going to be and how big a piece of their retirement planning can be in the long term. Whether that can be dealt with now in younger generations through better education, and whether that's done through schools or done through private sector. Apart from that, I think it's part of the Australian culture of, you know, she'll be right, mate. I'm not sure how to best address it without some sort of education process that's done younger and carried through so that people understand the true value of it.
Mm. And I sense, you know, even the studies we've seen on, you know, financial literacy and the move to try and address financial literacy in schools and education, and it's like the movement towards educating people about eating healthily and getting off sugar. And, you know, unless there's a legislative requirement to wear the seatbelt, literacy itself doesn't really work. And in some ways, it's an easy answer to a very set of complex behavioural, technical, compliant, regulatory issues. So I'm sensing, it's almost a one-on-one thing until it becomes that tipping point when 15% of the population get it and start to understand what's being created for them. But unless people like you at Acquire and your team are one-on-one going on board and helping people understand, then it may not catch on. What are your thoughts?
Oh, look, I think when you get one-on-one with people and you do have the opportunity to debunk a few myths about it, understand what's in their head, because a lot of times it's just a misunderstanding or a lack of understanding. So when you take them through quite clearly and give them the picture of it's this tax-free haven that you can legally put money in to reduce your tax while you're working, and then in retirement it's this tax-free bucket. And if you draw up a picture and say, would you rather pay 34% tax or 0% tax? And they go, zero. Okay, so would you rather use super as an investment tool, or would you rather pay 34% tax for the rest of your life? And they go, oh yeah, I sort of get it. It's not that hard for people to understand when you get them one-on-one. And then if you put a plan together with them and you work with them on holding them accountable and you have some contribution strategies and they can see it working for them, I think that's where it shifts.
So you make a really good point there for everyone listening that it's not that hard to figure it out if you can sit with someone and just explain it as you've just done there in literally 30 seconds. Is there something else stopping people to sit with someone to get them to explain it? Is there something, a bigger elephant in the whole system that's causing people not to get advice, not to go and investigate sometimes this biggest asset in their whole lives?
I find that still a lot of Australians run the DIY idea. I can do it myself better. And I think that just comes back that there's a lack of trust in the advice industry. And I know that's something we've worked on a lot with our clients and, you know, working through processes with you. But I think that there has to be that lifting professionalism across the advice industry so that people can know when they're going to see somebody that they are getting advice that, you know, is best for them, and it actually is going to help them, rather than in the past. It's always been for the product provider, the organisation. It's like, you know, Kiyosaki said at one point, it's like we've got the foxes in the hen houses. We're feeding people and we're teaching people financial information that is being fed from institutions that serve them, and it's not really serving the client. Yeah, I think there's that ultimate distrust of sitting in front of an advisor because they don't know whether it's going to be right for them or right for the person who's so-called advising them.
Yeah, okay. So the lack of trust about this government-regulated thing that the product manufacturers have jumped into eagerly and in a lot of ways benefiting, great profits being made out of some of these wealth groups and superannuation investment groups. But the more and more of them huddling in that corner makes more and more Australians to stay in their own DIY corner thinking, she'll be right, don't need to worry about it, and I don't trust that group anyway.
That's why you see so many super funds, you know, the numbers of those increasing dramatically. And I expect next time we see some sort of severe dip in the market, you're going to get a massive strike again because it's that lack of understanding of, well, it's my money and I don't have control over it. So they're going to take control back. But again, they even need more advice and more guidance when they're going to do it themselves.
Okay. So just on that one, what's your take then in this? I see APRA, Australian Prudential Regulatory Authority, their figures from June just this year showed that for the first time, the industry funds, the amount of money flowing and total amounts in industry funds now exceed the retail for-profit funds. So anyone listening to this, what's the ramifications of that that may affect them in the future? Do you draw any long bow on that?
I actually don't have a problem with that. I think ultimately that industry funds and not-for-profit funds are doing the right thing by their members and providing, you know, an investment product at a lower cost than a retail fund because it's better for the client. I don't have a problem with that. I think as part of the advice that we provide clients, we actually work with clients because whether they've got an industry fund or not, again, it's how we're using that asset for them. So we still advise them. You don't have to feel like we need to roll them into a retail product to then take a clip on the way through to give them advice. So I think if people are starting to walk with their feet and move money to the industry fund, great, because they're starting to take an interest in the actual cost of their investment. And the next thing that they might start to take an interest in is, how do I make it work harder for me and how can I find someone to help me?
Yeah, yeah, good. Yep, totally get it. That makes absolute sense. You don't care in terms of how the product, and if the product's performing, that's fine, because you're not making any money off the product. You're just making, you make your money off the quality of your advice. I get it. Go to another level then. If you were, so now if people are listening to you, as they are now today on the podcast, but if they listen to you and you were head of, say, superannuation policy in this country, what would be the first thing you'd do? What the biggest change you'd make?
Biggest change I'd make, I think, would be we still have to address the shortfall in retirement savings. That's just still there. And at this stage, I would just like say, right, I'm going to instigate a mandatory, and it's not popular, I don't think, but I'd say 10% mandatory salary sacrifice, and a self-employed business owner has to also put a 10% contribution into super, but take off the tax on it, no contribution tax. So in addition to what's going in through SG through the employer, it's going to get closer to that 20% savings rate. It's not going to benefit the government because there's no tax clip on it, but I think it's then just going to force those people to take a bit of extra attention to their money because it's now my money rather than just the whatever goes from an employer. And the same thing, where attention goes, energy flows. So, you know, where they start to look at it, they're going to pay attention, they're going to make to do some action different than what they've done in the past. And if that leads them to coming into city in front of an advisor, then I think that's the next step that can happen.
Yeah, no, that sounds sensible and simple too. Okay. So, again, people listening to this, Ronnie, who've, you know, obviously anyone working or even in retirement phase, they still have some superannuation balances. In your opinion, what are those three most important questions that anyone with super should be able to answer or needs answered to be ensured that they're across their superannuation money?
I think the first thing they just need to know is that it is actually the best savings vehicle for them. They fundamentally need to know that. Because when they understand that, then a lot of the other issues sort of fall by the wayside. From then, I think they need to then understand what the true costs are and how those costs relate to their peers. So it's not whether it's, you know, 0.5% or whatever that turns into dollars. That's meaningless unless there's some sort of peer comparison to say, well, I'm either, you know, in the middle of tax, I'm paying fair for my investment fees, or I'm way overpriced, to give them some understanding how that relates. And I think ultimately they need to know how much it's going to be in future value terms in their retirement and have some way to, you know, track that or influence that to say, right, I understand that this is an important piece of my retirement plan. It's like the corner piece of your jigsaw puzzle. It's not the whole piece, not the whole puzzle, but it is an important piece. So I think they need to understand how much that's going to be for them so they can start to quantify what other things they're going to have to do to get to that comfortable capital sum that they need.
Okay. Just on your second point there, Ronnie, you know, getting some sort of peer comparison, not just an understanding of percentages, because I agree with you, not many people understand what percentages mean. Quite often I see these peer comparisons and the product manufacturers are comparing against very convenient peers. How do the average Australian or someone listening to this understand when someone says, oh, you're only charging 60 basis points or 0.6% on our advice component? How do they know, like, compared to what, that's actually something that's reliable as compared to something that's been picked out by the product manufacturer that's favourable for the product manufacturer?
Yeah, but I think there'd have to be something created so that it could be trusted by consumers. You know, companies like Chantwest or someone that do independent ratings that could potentially collate that information. I don't know the solution, but I just think there's an easy way to do it, and it doesn't have to be driven by a convenient, you know, these are our peers, but these are our more expensive peers, and the industry has a way to capture median performances and other things. I'm sure they can do that across these.
Yeah, okay. So I sense for you, Ronnie, the sort of the overall, this lack of trust that's probably permeated the whole financial advice industry, not just their superannuation component, which has driven more and more Australians to say, oh, well, if I can't trust them, I might as well do it myself. That's led them in their busy or whatever lives they're living, which probably isn't centered around superannuation, judging by the apathy, to probably just, you know, dawdle along when we've got this fantastic opportunity that's been created that's not been taken advantage of because of potentially probably lack of trust, complexity that's been reigned, and the attitude, I guess, you see over Australians just to do it yourself. She'll be right. We'll look after ourselves. So anything else that you think, anyone listening to this, some terms of really understanding what may need to be done, better done, so they're living the better financial lives on the right paths to get the long-term financial objectives they want for themselves, their family, their loved ones, and everything important to them?
No, I think it all starts with them just having a good basic understanding that it's a genuinely sound savings tool. It's a good structure. Yes, there's some rules around it, but they're not that hard to understand when you sit down with someone who can explain it clearly. Tick that box and understand that it's an important piece to work on. Build a trusted relationship with someone who you can work with. And I think someone that you can get guidance from around some certainty in your life. So not just, you know, what did my funds return this year? What did my performance relate to? But what am I on track for? What's my path? Where am I going? How can you help me overcome the obstacles that are coming up along the track? All of those parts are valuable components rather than just, you know, the super part. So it's an important piece. It's like a corner piece of jigsaw puzzle. I think it is, but it's not going to get the whole picture put together. And most people, we can show that statistically, most people are still retiring on some sort of government pension. So they're not doing the job that they think they can do. They run out of time because they lack the knowledge around how money actually works and compounds over time. And so start early, understand there's some systems in place that can help and get some good advice.
Well, there you have it, Ryan Clamow from Acquire Wealth Partners in booming Southport. What did you think of that? Three things I took from that. Ryan is pretty adamant, you could have heard him, that the best saving strategy was, which was Ryan's first question and the three questions we should nail, that super is your best saving strategy. Yeah, so understand it that way, even though it might be unseen, unconnected, it is, from a tax perspective and a structural perspective, your best saving strategy. And if you don't feel like that at the moment, maybe finding relationships or getting confidence in someone to think about that in a different way, that it's with tax advantages, it's often better than what we lead towards maybe in other areas like property. Second thing I got from Ronnie, it's so his relaxed approach. You know, when I asked him about the growth of the industry funds, it's more of a yawn for firms like Ronnie, because Ronnie's firm's not connected to which product you use or which fund you use. It's just another engine underneath the bonnet, which hopefully you can take out and change based upon what you need and where you are in life. And like other good advisors like Ronnie and Donna at Acquire Wealth Partners, these are just means to achieve bigger ends for the clients. And ensure, so therefore the takeaway, the corollary to that is don't get conflicted advice from someone who is attached to the particular engine underneath the bonnet because they work for the particular organization who owns the funds, particularly with the growth of industry funds. They get the scale, they get the cost savings, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, a third thing I took away, super was not going to, for all its benefits, it's going to leave you short. If you just rely on super, it's not going to make up the shortfall. You need to do other things and need to get in relationships, have confidence in someone else that's helping you building other approaches, because super by itself for most of us is not going to be the answer to give us the retirement we hope to enjoy, to achieve those things we want to achieve, in Ronnie's opinion. So really strong three key things. So if you don't have a confident, impartial relationship with someone who keeps you on that unconflicted path, you may need someone like Ryan and Donna at Acquire Wealth Partners. So there you have it, another good advisory firm giving us our two bobs worth about what's actually happening, the changing perception of what is actually professional advice. It's not usually provided by those with conflicted arrangements with product providers. The only value they're adding is consistently making a difference in clients' lives, not by their product selection, but by their care, their direction, their advice, and sometimes their accountability. Love to get your feedback on this one, and thanks very much for listening. Jim Stackpool signing up. Cheers for now.
Thanks for listening to the Certainty Advice Podcast with Jim Stackpool. To access all the materials from today's show or to join in the conversation, please head on over to seekingcertainty.com. Please let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your feedback. Seekingcertainty.com.